You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2214 South Broad Street. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
Have y'all ever heard of that children's book, We're Going on a Bear Hunt? I think it's a song, too. I don't know the song, but here's one of the pages. We're going on a bear hunt. We're going to catch a big one. What a beautiful day. We're not scared. Uh-oh, a river. A deep, cold river. We can't go over it. We can't go under it. Oh, no. We got to go through it. I'm a fan of this book. I mean, do I think it's probably a bad idea that they go through the deep, cold river? Yes. But I appreciate that this encourages kids to like face obstacles instead of avoid them. That phrase, can't go under it, can't go over it, got to go through it, came to my mind as I was trying to articulate my process as a Jesus follower, as I try to navigate all of the very palpable fear and anxiety in the world today. Like Rachel said, this season we've been talking about beauty and sort of calling each other's attention to it in the midst of our chaotic world. So I wanted to share with y'all how I've been discovering the beauty of contemplative prayer as a way to sort of find my way through fear and anxiety these days. It seems like every week there is a new terror in the world. I thought this was a pretty fitting image for the kind of feeling of like imminent category 5 fear and edginess that we can feel sometimes. Mass shootings, famines, the glaciers are melting, sexual assault, deportations, natural disasters, rampant racism, violence perpetrated all over the world on innocents. And that's just some of it. And all of this sort of piled on top of our own personal terrors. You know, you lose someone you love, you experience racism because of the way that you look. You have a health scare, your debt keeps mounting, you're unemployed, or maybe you're working a job that you hate. You're not married, and you wish that you were. You are married, you kind of wish you weren't. You might be asking yourself terrifying questions like, is this all that my life really is? The terror in the world and the ways that we're feeling that in our own lives, we're holding on to all of that. And if you love anyone in the world, you're kind of holding on to it for them too. What I'm hearing from my friends and from my cell and even from all of you like at the last love feast that we had, we're beginning to feel the weight of all of it. Some friends and I were talking about this weight the other day, and my friend Megan, who's here, right there, said something that I think we've all either feeling now or have felt before. She said, you know that verse Jesus says, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. Sometimes that sounds so empty to me. I wish someone would tell me how to really believe that and really feel that that is true. Here's the scripture she was talking about, if you aren't familiar with it. It's in the Gospel of John. At this point in the Gospel, Jesus is minutes away from being arrested and then led to his violent death. He has some urgency right now in preparing his disciples for what's about to happen and what life will be like for them after his death and his resurrection. You know, there's no parables being told right now. He's talking pretty plainly. The disciples are like, finally, you know, he speaks plainly to us. And the verse that Megan was quoting is that part in red. I swear I didn't make it so small that you couldn't read it on purpose. Can anyone see this? Maybe someone at front that could read the red part to us.
These things I have spoken to you so that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage.
Thanks, Ben. I really felt where Megan was coming from. It's kind of like, I hear what you're saying, Lord, to me, but it's hard to believe when the trouble in the world sometimes feels more with me than you do. Dealing with the tribulation, the trouble in the world, and processing all of that anxiety is a task, and we face it every day. Well, some of us do. I think that one of the ways that we cope with anxiety is just not to face it, which I think is like the equivalent of like toddler hide and seek. You know, if I just cover my eyes here and act like this is not happening, trouble won't find me, maybe. I think that works short term. You know, ignoring this stuff is so easy. There's like a buffet of distractions, like Golden Corral multiple stations, self-serve yogurt sort of buffet, you know, like a big buffet of distractions in our consumer culture for us to use to sort of stiff arm these anxieties. If you don't want to think about it, no problem. Here's free streaming on your phone. There's another way we cope too. Instead of stiff arming it and ignoring it, we keep it like real close, like a my precious sort of situation. If this is our tack, I think we kind of fixate on our fear. You look for it, you think about it a lot, you mull it over, you play out the different scenarios in your head. This, admittedly, has been my preferred unhealthy method of coping the past year with anxiety, basically since my son was born in January. As a proud first-time mom, I'm under contract to mention my son Abel as much as possible in this talk. I don't know how that got into this slide. Abel was born in January, and I tell you, I was so amazed and so in love, I still am. I felt the intensity of my love for him and also how vulnerable he was in the world and how vulnerable I was for loving him so much and him being so vulnerable. On one hand, I was like blissed out by being a new mom. On the other hand, I imagined daily a million different ways the harm might come to him, and I thought, this joy won't last. Maybe if I could anticipate all the things, I could protect him and protect myself. Can y'all relate to this at all? Just the fixating on the fear and an effort to, I think, exercise some control in what feels like an out-of-control world. Maybe even an effort to protect yourself. I learned this as a young adult. From when I was about 17 to 23, everything about my family system was in flux. When I was about to start my senior year in high school, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma. Miraculously, she fought it, she lived, and she's still living. It's a chronic form of lymphoma, which means it keeps coming back. But every time she's fought it and pressed on. A few years after she was diagnosed, my older sister was diagnosed with leukemia. She was 24 at the time. She lost that fight, and she died in the summer of 2005. Just 1 year later, my parents told me they were going to get a divorce. It was really messy, and the drama kind of dragged on for quite a while, years. Soon after that announcement, my mother's cancer came back. And that was the first time it came back, and we were sort of like, is she going to make it through this time? Soon after that, I started, or through the midst of that, I really started learning to expect bad news. The joys of high school graduation and college and, you know, whatever the lie is about skyrocketing into the professional world was sort of like tamped down by this like successive loss in my life. I expected that when you had joy, pain would quickly follow. And I didn't feel certain about the safety of anyone in my life. And so I became on guard against loss as a way to protect myself. And I think I'm just now sort of recognizing that and learning, or rather unlearning, that way of being. I don't think it really jives with the way of Jesus. Lauren Winter is one of my all-time favorite authors. Has anybody heard of her? She recently wrote this book. Her latest book is called Wearing God. And in it, she kind of explores the vulnerability of God. And this is my paraphrase of some of the things that she says. God is vulnerable because God loves. Those moments when I stop fighting my own vulnerability are exactly the moments when I most participate in God's very nature and God's very life. If we're not ignoring it, I think that we all feel this. We all feel our vulnerability in different ways. And feeling that way without knowing the nearness of God and that he has overcome the world is really terrifying. And I can see why we try to distract ourselves. I've been really turning this question over and over, how to embrace our vulnerability as Jesus did when he came to us as a baby and was murdered, while also knowing that peace that Jesus promised us. And this question has led me to contemplative prayer. Contemplative prayer not as a solution for fear or like a way to beat fear now or anything, but going back to our bear hunt as a way to go through it. I started trying to make contemplative prayer a practice few months ago. I was in Georgia for a couple of weeks visiting family and friends, and I heard from two different friends who were going through hard times that they had turned to silence and solitude as kind of an anchor. And since I was feeling adrift in my own way, kind of tossed around by my nagging worries, I decided to try it. And I started with 3 minutes, y'all. That's it. For over a week, just 3 minutes of trying to be silent and focus on my breath. Months later, I've worked my way up to 10 full minutes. I tell you that because I think that I've avoided it for a long time, like trying to be in silent prayer because I thought that if I didn't do it for an hour, it really wouldn't make much of a difference or count or something. I've learned a lot about contemplative prayer over the years through Rod. He suggested, if y'all don't know about Rod, he's a pastor here. He suggested using a word or a phrase, something meaningful between you and God that can help you focus. At some point in his spiritual life, a tree had become like an important symbol, like an image for him. So he started saying the word tree, like as he inhaled in prayer, as a way to focus and find a center. At this point, I find that if I try to use a word or a symbol, I get kind of distracted. I was trying to use the ocean for a while, but then I would like think about being at the beach. So I let that go. So I just breathe now. That's right. Just breathe. You're not even really supposed to think about the fact that you're breathing. You're just supposed to breathe in and out. Sometimes I count my breaths as a way to focus. It basically feels like the most unproductive way I could spend 10 minutes. I'm home with Abel right now. I'm not working outside of the home, and he consistently takes just like 30-minute naps. So 10 minutes is like a third of my free time, you know? When I'm doing it and it feels so useless, I think, man, I could be doing the dishes. I could be eating lunch. I could be watching Netflix. When I'm trying, these thoughts and feelings of all kinds assault me, which is expected and normal. Even St. Teresa of Avila, who was around a long time ago, said, if you try not to have thoughts, they will come from the four corners of the earth. Teresa knew, you know, that at a first, it's chaos. But what I have been learning through reading and sitting through some guided prayer is that when these thoughts and feelings come, you note them, and then you let them go like a balloon. I actually imagine like a little thought bubble, kind of, when these thoughts come. And then I watch it like go behind me, and then I come back to my breathing. Someone said that in contemplative prayer, you're no longer a victim of your thoughts, a victim to your anxious thoughts even, but a witness to them. Something has happened to me over the past few months of semi-regularly attempting this. I now feel like when Abel naps, that if I want to feel like I've had a true break, I should try to pray. Slowly, these few moments in contemplative prayer every day have sort of set the bar for me for rest. Like, oh, this is what rest feels like. I've been thinking a lot about fear, and I think that fear comes from this perceived sense of a separation from God. You know, that God is not with us, that God is not with the ones that we love. We may not be able to even articulate that we're thinking that. It's like kind of under everything. You know, that God will not give us what we need when we're faced with something terrible. But the more I discover through contemplative prayer, about contemplative prayer through experience and reading and conversations, is that I think learning to be present and silent and still is a way to know and really feel the truth that God is with me and that God has overcome the world. Like we were talking about. The early church thought of it like a wagon wheel, that we are like the spokes and that God is the center. And as we move closer to our center, we move closer to God and closer to each other. Father Martin Laird is a priest in the Catholic Church, and he's also a professor at Villanova. And he wrote this kind of amazing instructional book that I've only read pieces of about contemplative prayer. It's called Into the Silent Land. He talks about how this union with God is not something we can acquire, which I think is hard for us because we're like world-class consumers. But that union that we so want to feel that God is right here with us is actually already ours. Laird says that God is the ground of our being because God is the creator and we are the creature. By grace, separation from God is not possible. This feeling of separation and distance from God that most of us experience at various points throughout our life, Laird says, is the great illusion that we are caught up in. And it is the human condition. While this sense of this separation is really real, stillness reveals that this separation does not have the last word. Would somebody read that, the first paragraph for us? Actually, all of it.
This illusion of separation is generated by the mind and is sustained by the riveting of our attention to the interior soap opera, the constant chatter of the cocktail party going on in our heads. For most of us, this is what normal is, and we are good at coming up with ways of coping with this perceived separation. Our consumer-driven entertainment culture takes care of much of it. But some of us are not so good at coping. And so we drink ourselves into oblivion or cut or burn ourselves so that the pain will be in a different place.
Henry Nouwen tells a story about being at a dinner table with a bunch of friends, and they're kind of going round and round about the darkness of the world, like exchanging news stories, terrible news stories. And in the middle of dinner, the host's son runs in with a little kitten, which I just like couldn't resist. I had to put that up there. And he's just loving on it. And now instead, you can really feel the relief in the room as everyone coos at this enthusiastic, loving boy in this really tender moment. And then the feeling when he leaves the room is, how nice and sweet. Too bad that's like not the real world. But Nouwen reflects later, Christ came as a child into a violent world. What if what the child reveals to us is more real than the dark world that we perceive to be reality? I'm learning that in the meditative silence of contemplative prayer, those false things can fall away, and the truth about myself and my connection to God and that there's hope in the world can be revealed. So the scripture that my friends and I were talking about, Megan ended up saying in the course of the conversation, you know, maybe what I need to do is just, you know, repeat this verse to myself every day, again and again, until I believe it. I think that was like a simple idea that she just kind of threw out that's actually pretty profound. With our mustard seed of faith, maybe we can say, I think this might be true, that Jesus has overcome the world. Or at least I really hope that is true. And with that mustard seed, you know, we come to prayer and we say, I'm going to pray this every day. I'm going to let this verse, this word, this breath be like a flame for me in a dark room. And I'll come here every day in silence to watch the candle. And as I live my life commuting, cooking, sleeping, laughing, there is this flame, this candle burning, that I can return to at my center to be reminded that God and I are one.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.